Greetings, and may the peace of Christ be with you. Welcome to Holy Family Radio. This is Deacon Jim Thorndall, and I'm privileged to be your host today. I warmly invite you to enter into another conversation in living the Catholic life. I'm looking out at this beautiful winter day, and it's the sun is shining out there, and it seems life is good. So, and I think to myself, maybe perhaps you who are listening in the midst of raising your family today, and you start to hear something, some strange talk, maybe talk you consider to be some New Age terms you haven't heard before, and you just decide that it's really just a phase they're going through and nothing to worry about. Or perhaps you're hearing about acupuncture and you're hearing something about how you can alter your state of consciousness. Perhaps you hear talk about astrology or centering prayer. And maybe even your children are talking to some people they know who are into channeling or spouting the values of crystals, or perhaps the conversation turns to enneagrams. And to top it all off, maybe one of your family friends or members of your family has taken up the practice of yoga just for the exercise. So what's the big deal? I'd like to read you an excerpt from a book by an author who I will soon introduce to you. The title of the book is Learn to Discern. Is it Christian or New Age? And listen to this. One way to learn about authentic Christian prayer and meditation is to learn what it isn't. Transcendental meditations and its contemporary spawn, centering prayer. And be aware of yoga. It's not just an exercise program. Whether one practices yoga for fitness purposes or not, a central part of the practice is non-Christian form of meditation that seeks the self rather than God and is woven into a typical class in ways a beginner may not even notice. So what's the big deal? Let's find out what the big deal is. Today with me, I have an author and journalist who's with Women of Grace. Her name is Susan Brinkman. She's a member of the Third Order of the DeKalb Carmelites. Susan, thank you for being here. Welcome.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Deacon.
Yes. You know, it's amazing. When I first kind of started to dabble in this understanding of what this was, a friend of mine, Noemi, had called me, and she wanted me to really kind of dig into this, and she mentioned your name. And then you and I had the opportunity to speak, and I asked if you would send me some of the books you had written. And I tell you what, I was blown away by what I read.
Yes, it's astonishing how deeply involved everybody is in this stuff is just amazing to me. This phenomenon has taken off in the last 5 or 6 years.
And, you know, I think the most dangerous part of it all is the indifference or the non-knowledge that people have of all of this going on.
That's true. I think that's the biggest problem.
Yeah.
That you nailed it right there. That is the biggest problem right now. Why this is spreading the way it is,
exactly,
is a simple lack of education.
Well, Susan, before we go any farther, first of all, I know that my audience is listening, and I know that they hear now the name of Susan Brinkman. But we need to know who you are. And I think it's always important that they really kind of have an understanding of where you've been and where you've come from to give you that credence and the authority to speak on this. So give us let me ask you this. Born and raised Catholic?
Born and raised Catholic, that's right. And I fell away from the church for a long period of time, about 15 years. I myself dabbled in the New Age.
Okay.
I was very into astrology, and I was regularly visiting a psychic. But my life fell apart, and I, you know, hit that nadir.
Yeah.
That happens to so many people.
Yeah.
And I just turned to God, and I just said, you know, are you out there? Are you for real?
Exactly.
And that started me on a lifelong journey. In fact, I wrote a book about it. I was foolish enough to actually publish what I call my naughty girl story. It's called We Need to Talk, God Speaks to a Modern Girl.
Yeah.
And, you know, he brought me back. He brought me way, way, way back and taught me things about especially the moral issues and the moral teachings of the church, you know, being female, well, birth control, abortion, stay off my body. You know, you have no right to tell me what to do with my body. I was in that camp.
Exactly.
100%.
Were you
100% there.
Were you part of the feminist revolt?
Exactly.
Okay.
That's exactly what it was. I was a feminist to the word go.
Okay.
And he would just have me learn things, and I wouldn't even be asking for it, really. I just was praying. I was reading the Bible secretly.
Yeah.
Because I like the Psalms.
You know, and I don't want to throw that word feminist wrong, meaning disrespectful. I should have said radical feminism, because that's really what it was. Feminism is such a beautiful word in and of itself.
It is. Of course it is.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad that you point that out, because I also, as you know, work for Women of Grace.
Yes.
And
I know.
That's what we do. We try to teach women who they really are,
exactly,
with the true true dignity that they have as a daughter of God and not what this society is making them into, which is objectifying them.
Exactly. You know, Susan, I want to go back a little bit, too, because were you public schools, Catholic schools? What were you,
I was Catholic schools the whole way.
Okay, okay.
Catholic schools the whole way, went to Penn State. I really just floated off. I mean, I just went off by my, you know, I didn't want to do it anymore. I didn't want to have anything to do with the church. I felt it was just too old-fashioned. And then, as I said, I did start to come back. I started to pray. I looked at the Psalms.
Okay.
And I just couldn't imagine who this God was that David was talking to.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And I was calling him David's God. And that's who I would pray to. And then I had my niece said to me one day at a big family party, I want my Aunt Susie, that's how I'm known in my family is Susie, I want my Aunt Susie to be my confirmation sponsor, and I don't want anybody else. And, of course, everyone started snickering, you know. She's divorced. She's been away from the church for 15 years. They're never going to let her. And I ended up going and having a chat at my at the rectory of my parish,
uh-huh.
and which is a funny story. It's in my book. But anyway, long story short, I said to him, you know, I'll make a deal with you. If you give me the certificate and let me be your sponsor, I promise to go back to church.
Wow.
And he said, yes.
Wow.
And the very next week, I thought, oh, my goodness, I promised a priest I'm going to church. I don't even know what time the masses are. And from that day forward, I went to church every week. Now, of course, I go every day. But that began a long, long journey back to God. And he led me very gently, very kindly.
Yeah.
He knew where I was coming from, but he totally turned me around. And I have never been so happy.
Yeah. You know, that's how God works, too. He works in that small little voice, that small way that doesn't smack you in the face many times. He gently leads you back. But I want to ask you this, because we're going to get more into this toward the end in the discussion. But can you think of anything in particular, particularly when you were in college or even in high school, that started to really turn you off to your Christianity? Was there anything in particular?
I think that it was, for me, being a radical feminist at the time, it had to be about birth control and abortion.
Okay.
The teaching, those two teachings alone, just that was it for me.
How about women's ordination?
Pardon?
How about women ordination?
No. And you know what? When I was growing up, that was not an issue.
Okay.
Nobody even talked about that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm just trying to clarify a few things because I find it interesting, too, that, you know, the abortion was a huge one for so many Catholics, even today.
Right, right. And birth control was another big one. Oh, you know, what am I supposed to do? Have 100 kids and not be able to pay for them all? And,
exactly.
You know, the lines that we would always use.
Of course.
And I didn't understand what the church teaching was, that it was so much about the love and the romance that I really wanted.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful?
When I read Humanae Vitae, I was blown away. I thought, oh my gosh, the things that Pope Paul VI was saying in that document about how what love is supposed to be,
yeah,
and how we're supposed to be open to love and open to procreation.
That's right.
And that this is what marriage was all about. And I thought to myself, well, what's wrong with that?
I mean,
that's sort of what I want.
Exactly. And how closed off marriages become when they don't understand the message of being unitive and procreative in a marriage, the two vital elements in a marriage.
Exactly, exactly. And but I didn't understand all that. And then I read, of course, the great document, Mulieris Dignitatum.
Yes.
And that sealed my fate.
Yeah.
By the time I finished that, the feminist was really having some serious doubts
You were becoming a woman of the Lord.
What was that?
I said you were becoming a woman of the Lord.
I was. I started to realize, you know what? I kind of like this God.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful? So you were at Penn State. What were you studying there?
Economics.
Okay. And did you finish that degree?
No, I didn't.
Okay. But then I'm trying to get to your journey here to the Women of Grace. How did that all come about?
A Woman of Grace. Well, you know, I one of my prayers to the Lord during that time that I was trying so hard to come back to God, one of my prayers was that I could be a writer.
Okay.
And I loved to write. I'd always loved to write since I was 4 years old. And I just couldn't seem to get published anywhere. And I prayed to the Lord, and before you knew it, my first novel got published.
Wonderful.
And I truly believed it was him, and I know it was him. Of course it was.
Give us the name of that novel.
Pardon?
Give us the name of that novel.
Oh, that's not even in print anymore. It's called Dancing in the Dark.
Dancing in the Dark, okay.
Yeah, which is what I was doing. And actually, the original title for it was Divine Origin, believe it or not.
Yeah.
But they ended up retitling it. But anyway, so I really believed that he had helped me to be a writer, and he opened the door for me to be able to write for the Catholic Standard and Times newspaper here in the Diocese of Philadelphia. This was our newspaper.
Yes.
And I got started in that. I thought to myself, well, I don't want to write nonfiction. I'm a fiction writer, blah, blah, blah. But the editor of the paper, who I knew, she was in my Carmelite chapter, she said, just shut up. You're starting on Monday. It was just, you can write. If you can write a 250,000-word novel, you can write a 500-word newspaper article.
There you go.
You're coming to work here. So I did. And that's actually where I began to get involved more and more in the New Age.
Okay.
Because in 2003... of course, that great document was issued, Jesus Christ, the Bearer of the Water of Life, and I was assigned to that.
Okay.
And I began to do a lot of research into some of the practices that were in there, and it just opened up this whole new world for me. I thought, oh, my goodness, all this stuff with the psychic that I was doing, I didn't know that was the occult.
Yeah.
I had no idea about that.
Nor did you realize you were putting yourself in danger.
No, and see, that's a big problem right now, Deacon Jim. It really is, because they don't understand the occult. Nobody talks about the occult. Nobody talks about the dangers of it. And the occult is very much interwoven in the New Age.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Very, very much interwoven in there. It's New Age is actually like an umbrella term.
Mm-hmm.
And it encompasses a wide variety of beliefs and practices that mostly emphasize the self over the divine.
Exactly.
Like for the New Ager, everything is me, myself, and I. It's all about me, 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 me. And you know, the humans and the universe, we're all one, we're all interconnected, we're all divine, which is pantheistic.
Of course it is.
Their God is an impersonal energy force. This is the chi, the ki, the prana, universal life force. It has no organized religions. Their church is the internet.
Yes, it is. You know, and when you're throwing these terms around, now these are terms that the average person doesn't hear very often. All these different things, but these are the nuances of the New Age. These are the words of the New Age that they use on that too. But I'm going to take it back to a statement you made also, is that you know, we don't hear much about the occult, and I'm not saying we need to preach it at the ambo so much, but we need to speak more about, you know, we talk about the love of God, but there is that other side.
Absolutely, there is, and when you have shows right now that are so popular, like the Long Island Medium.
Mm-hmm.
And people are out there thinking, oh, it's okay. You know, and we do pray to saints. We pray to dead people. So what's the difference? Why can't I just, you know, go to this medium, have them bring back my Uncle Joe because I need to ask him some questions?
Yeah.
You know, people are doing this.
Yes.
And I've been invited to parishes just here in my archdiocese where they're having severe problems with it and saying, you got to come down here and talk about this occult stuff because our parishioners are seeing this psychic or they're seeing this medium, and they're all talking about this Long Island medium. They think there's nothing wrong with contacting the dead. They have no idea how dangerous it is.
And what they are opening themselves up to by allowing their minds to drift into that place.
Oh, absolutely it is.
Yeah.
And they don't understand the workings. They don't understand who Satan is,
for
one thing. They don't know who he is. A lot of people think he's the caricature on a dirt devil vacuum.
Of course, that's it.
No, he is a personal being.
Yeah.
And he is out to get you. And he knows all of the different weaknesses that you have and all the little buttons that he can push to get into your life. And the one thing he really wants to do is to get you to turn to him through some sort of occult practice like Ouija boards. Look how huge the Ouija board got this Halloween after that movie.
I can remember being a youngster and messing around with a Ouija board and trying to figure out how the heck it was working. You know, and you realize there's some energy going through there, but I never really got any farther than that. But, you know, that is a dangerous thing to be involved in.
Extremely dangerous. Some of the worst cases of possession, exorcists will tell you, happen as a result of playing with a Ouija board. Some of the most difficult possessions, in order for them to work and free the person, it always starts with a Ouija board. And that story that took place in the movie The Exorcist was actually even more terrifying when you read the real story and you see what this young boy went through.
Mm-hmm.
Just all kinds of manifestations that were going on that were scaring the doctors and the nurses. They didn't even want to go in and treat him.
Of course.
Because furniture in his place was moving around. I mean, he pulled a metal spring out of the mattress and he slit the arm of the priest from the shoulder to the wrist. It required 100 stitches.
Oh, my.
In rage when that priest was trying to exorcise him. It was just, it's a phenomenal story, actually, the true story, and not that, this Hollywood version.
And that is the power of possession.
Yes. But you know what? There's a lot more to it. Infestation is a big thing. You would be surprised at how much mail John at Bank of It and I, but John at Bank of It, of course, is the founder of A Women of Grace. The two of us, the mail that we get from people about infestations that have been going on in their homes, in their lives, and they think nothing of it. Oh, Sue, we've had a spirit in our house for years. We call him Jerry or whatever.
Really?
And we just, he's fine. He's not going to hurt us. It's, excuse me. Do you realize that's a demon?
Exactly. And they're comfortable with that, you're saying.
Exactly. They have no clue about the spiritual entities that exist in the supernatural realm. They don't know what exists there. They just think, oh, yeah, there must be such thing as an avatar and a spirit guide. There's no such thing as that. These are made-up entities.
You know, Susan, I tell a lot of people, I said, look, the devil today wears a three-piece suit. He's got a Ph.D. in psychology, in nuclear physicists. He's got a Ph.D. in every degree. He's so much smarter than you are. Don't dabble with him because he will overpower you if you allow that.
Oh, absolutely. And he's always going to make it seem as though that he has what you want.
Yeah, exactly.
He's going to give that to you.
You know,
he may do that. He may give it to you, but in the end, he's going to take it all away plus some.
Exactly. You know, Susan, I think a lot of our listeners are probably going, "Wow, this is something I've never heard," and they're probably not really being able to grasp what we're talking about yet. But we're going to talk a lot more on this. But you know, I just want the people, first of all, to know that you are going to be here speaking on Saturday, May 2nd, 2015, at St. Anne's Home, and we're going to talk more about that. But you are going to be bringing this up to the conference there, and I think this is so necessary for people to be hearing, because it touches my family also, and it's not only problematic, it's dangerous.
It's very dangerous, and I think that though once you get the information out there, once you educate people, it's really very heartening to see how quickly they are willing to stop what they're doing and repent.
Yeah, you know,
all they need is the information.
You know, and with a little information, I'm telling you, just in the information you sent me, it was mind-boggling to me. I was reading the glossary of terms and reading all these different things, not understanding them completely until I really started to sit down and really look through and say, oh, my gosh, I've heard this before, but I never realized this is what it was.
Yes.
And then you start to get insight into this. So, you know, I'm digging more into it as after the show, because I want to know more about this, because I want to be able to defend my position when I speak to people about this. And that's important.
Absolutely it is. And you just need to get that information and need to get it out there. And I'm really happy to be coming there, because the presentation I'm going to give is going to be very comprehensive. I'm going to try to pack as much as I can into that three-hour conference, and you're going to get into everything on energy medicine. We're going to talk about all the Eastern influences in prayer, and yoga. We're going to get into all of this stuff and just try to give you the facts. This is my old reporter days coming out in me now.
I love it.
The old journalist who started out studying economics and ended up becoming a journalist. I don't know how that happened, but anyway. Really just give you the facts.
Exactly. Well, you know, the old saying is so true. You can't know what you don't know. And until these people, until the people listening to us or listening to you are given the facts of what it really means, you've got to have that firm understanding of what you're getting into to make that decision. And without it, you're going blank. You know, I'm just going to pick on something right now, because we had a lot to talk about. I'm looking at your different books here. There's one called Psych Channeling.
Oh yeah, that's a big thing right now. Psychics and channeling, psychics who will predict your future.
Yeah,
they divine your future through a variety of means. They can do it either by screening through, you know, looking at a ball, a crystal ball,
right?
Or they do it in a lot of cases. The psychic that I went to did it through astrology
and natal
charts and that sort of thing. It was telling me all kinds of stuff about myself, and a lot of stuff she told me actually happened.
Uh-huh.
And I remember thinking to myself, well, how could that be? How did she get it right? Well, then of course, in my research and my study, I found out, hey, you know what? Once I learned who the devil was, that's a cakewalk for him. He can figure stuff like that out.
Exactly.
He can feed psychics with all kinds of information about you. That's not hard. That's easy for him. We forget that the devil is an angel.
Yeah, fallen.
He was an angel. He was a fallen angel. See,
he has
all the powers of angels, and angels are incredibly powerful beings. Now, not the kind that the New Age likes to tell you about.
Right.
These are the kind that come to you in the dream and tell you how you can make all kinds of money and how you can, you know, win the love of your life and that sort of thing. These are what I call the New Age garden fairies.
Okay.
And they are garden fairies compared to the real thing.
Yeah, yeah.
To what an authentic angel truly is. The power that they have, the intellect that they have. I mean, everything about them is so incredible. The way they move, the way they communicate with one another. They're just phenomenal beings.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, but people don't understand that either. And they don't understand that, okay, Satan is a fallen angel. He has all these same powers, only he's using them now to steal souls away from Christ.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, the people you would go to, and I know it's probably an obvious answer to this, but the people you would go to, these psychics and these people channeling, obviously they aren't Christian.
No, but you know what? I considered myself to be a Christian when
mm-hmm.
I was going.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I wasn't going to church, I wasn't a practicing Catholic anymore, I can still consider myself to be Christian, and I still did believe in God.
Okay.
And that psychic really talked to me a lot about God and all that kind of stuff. Of course, the psychic, they know that. That's their business. They are going to just talk to you about the things that may mean something to you. They're going to be on your side. They're going to, you know, just try to relate to you.
Okay.
And so, of course, she would, you know, invoke the Lord during her sessions. Hey, John Edward, you know, from the Sci-Fi Channel, the famous psychic medium, he says the rosary.
My goodness.
Before he contacts people's dead relatives.
And then
has directly against Deuteronomy 18.
Of course it is.
Where the Lord condemns anyone who contacts the dead and contacts spirits. But he's sitting there praying the rosary. And what does that do? It makes Catholics think it's okay.
Yeah. And that is so misleading. And yet, to the average Catholic listening, they're probably trying to differentiate. Why is it bad that somebody would, like I said, why was it bad that somebody would talk to the dead as if we pray to the saints? But there's a different understanding of trying to contact somebody and trying to learn what the future is for you or what's
exactly.
going on. And that is very dangerous.
It's extremely dangerous. And, you know, people don't understand that the disembodied human soul, which is what we are going to be when we die, we don't have a body anymore.
Right.
So there's no way that we can haunt houses and walk around and throw pans around in the middle of the night because we don't have bodies. We can't speak. We don't have voices. So the only way that a disembodied soul can come back and be contacted through the Long Island medium is if they borrow a body, so to speak,
okay.
from another either supernatural or a preternatural source. Supernatural would be God. Preternatural
right.
would be angels or demons.
Exactly.
Now, supernatural, we know from Scripture that God says, hey, I don't want, and I'm paraphrasing now, in Deuteronomy 18, and I always refer to that one, but there's several others in there, where he says, you know, you are an abomination to me if you contact the dead and contacting spirits, and if you're a diviner or a soothsayer. So we already know that God's not going to let them borrow a body from him.
Exactly.
Because of that. He's not going to contradict himself. So will he allow his angels to do it? Well, of course not, because his angels exist purely to do his will.
That's right.
And a disembodied human soul doesn't have a body, so they're not capable of doing it.
Exactly.
So who's left?
Satan.
Demons.
Yeah.
That's why the church teaches that they highly suspect, although they've never made really an announcement or a pronouncement on ghosts. This is why they say that they believe that those manifestations are demonic.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's because of that. Just by the process, just by logic and by the scripture that we do have, it just makes sense that's who's causing these.
Exactly.
These different infestations and manifestations is the devil, but people don't know that.
You know, Susan, and that word is so powerful, the abomination. God really sees that as something contrary to what he wants for us as human beings. And he's very emphatic in that. Like I said, in Deuteronomy, he calls that an abomination to him.
That's right.
That we would dabble in something like that because that's for him alone.
That's right. And look what happened to Saul with the witch of Endor.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, when she called up Samuel, and God allowed Samuel to be called up. You know, God is in control of these beings.
Mm-hmm.
He's in control of Satan.
Yes.
And he allowed that. And then what happened to Saul the next day? He was killed.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
I mean, it's not.
And that was forecast.
People don't want to dabble around in this stuff.
Yeah.
Because you open a portal. That's what we call, you know, who kind of are sort of in this line of work. It's known as a portal. You open a door.
Yep.
And before you open that door, the devil can only really act upon you in an indirect way, such as through temptation to sin.
Exactly.
But once you open that portal, once you start to turn to this stuff and start to dabble around in this stuff, now we can start to influence you more directly. And that's when you begin to get into areas of infestation, which lead then, of course, to oppression.
Exactly.
Which is where he begins to work on your mind and on your physical self. You know, insomnia, confused thinking, all kinds of stuff will happen from that. So
restlessness, sleeplessness, everything like that.
Yeah, that all can...
Confusion.
Anxiety attacks, panic attacks. This all can start to happen, and even worse, far worse, actually, in that. So people need to understand that just casually turning towards something, and I'm talking about now horoscopes. I'm talking about the New Age.
Yep.
Dabbling around in Reiki, fooling around in yoga, putting your body in positions of worship to Hindu gods, violation of the first commandment.
That's what I'm going to talk about pretty soon, too, because, you know, that's going to be one that's really going to probably set some people's hair on the back of their head and their neck on end, because they're going to hear this. But I think we need to talk about this today. Because
we do. We absolutely do need to talk about yoga. Yoga is a huge problem. And people need to understand what they're doing there, too. But see, there again, we keep coming back to the same thing over and over again so far in the show, if you noticed.
Yeah.
A lack of information.
Exactly.
If you give people information, they'll take it, and then you leave that with the Lord and that person. And you give them the information they need, and you'd be surprised at how many people will stop doing this stuff. It's just they don't know.
Exactly. You know, of course, in my city here and probably yours too, there's a church of yoga all over the place. I see on Sunday that they're as crowded as some of the churches today, where people see that as their God when they go to these yogas on Sunday morning. Let me ask you this question, Susan. Is yoga is it one of the first steps in dabbling and deeper, or is it the other comes first and then they get into yoga?
Well, you know, yoga is one way that people do begin to dabble in stuff. And I know Father Bill Niemiller, if I'm not mistaken, he's the one who wrote. If you look him up, Niemiller, K-N-E-E-M-I-L-L-E-R is his name. He actually had to be delivered of spirits that had been attached to him since he was dabbling around in transcendental meditation. Mm. And I believe he began in yoga.
He began in yoga.
He started out in yoga. A lot of people will start out in yoga and then move to other things. One of the other things, of course, would be Hinduism.
Of course.
They begin to get involved in that. But in yoga, the big thing right now is that people will say to you, oh, but Sue, it's just an exercise.
Well, I have to tell you this, Susan.
I'm just doing the exercises.
Two Catholic priests I talked to, it's exactly what they said to me. Diocesan priests who really didn't have an understanding of what yoga was.
No, they don't. They really do not know about it. And I'm not casting any aspersion on them. They simply don't have the information that they need.
Well, same thing
about. And we need to get it to them.
Yeah. Lack of information.
Lack of information. Yoga was never designed as exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Yoga is a religious practice. Okay?
Yep.
It always was a religious practice. And it would be like saying that you could make the sign of the cross in order to exercise your tricep muscles.
Or to genuflect.
Or to genuflect.
Yeah.
It is an exercise.
Mm-hmm.
The sign of the cross, let's just use that as an example, was never designed as a tricep exercise, was it?
Never.
So neither was the sun salutation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, neither was the fish's asana. Neither was the half moon asana. Neither was that. These were all developed as positions of worship to Hindu deities. That's what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And people will say, yeah, but it's not my intention. It isn't my intention to do that. To do that. And it's true that for an act to be, you know, morally good, we know a person's intention has to be good. And if you're motivated to do something by a bad intention, even something that is, say, objectively good, our action is still morally evil, right?
Exactly.
And it must also be recognized, I think, that a good intention can't make a bad action good.
Exactly.
So you can never do something wrong or evil in order to bring about a good, meaning you can't sit there and position yourself in a position of worship to a Hindu god because you want to be more fit. You can't do stuff like that.
And again, it goes back to people not understanding what it is and putting themselves in a position without knowing it. I don't mean position of the yoga, but in a locale, in a position to not understand they can be attacked by something greater than themselves.
Exactly. They exactly can. That can happen to them. And I'll tell you what, there's a very, very interesting case going on right now out in California that we need to watch where yoga is concerned. And this is in the Encinitas Union School District, where a parent sued a school, a public school, because they introduced yoga. And this is something that I'm thinking, and actually I'm hoping, will become a wave of the future, because yoga is not exercise. And anyone who does any research on it, such as the judges in this particular case, will tell you that. And as a matter of fact, any Hindu will tell you that as well. They're very offended by the thought that we take their something that's so precious to them as their practice and try to make this into an exercise regime. I mean, yeah. Would you like it if somebody did that to our practices?
Yeah, we'd be very upset.
Very. I mean, that's very offensive to them that we do this. But anyway, in this lawsuit, the Encinitas Union School District claimed that, oh, no, we stripped all of the religious aspects of the faith from this yoga, and we're just doing these exercises, blah, blah, blah. Well, the court at first ruled, okay, you can allow that in there because you stripped it. But then they looked into it, the judges in this case, and they actually reversed their decision, and they issued a revised statement of decision, which is really pretty rare.
Exactly.
That's very, very rare. And they acknowledged the fact that the same yoga poses that the students were doing in Encinitas schools were identical to those taught by a Hindu foundation that was supporting it, which is the Joas Foundation. Mm. And they said it's the same thing. Those poses are identical to the religious poses, so what's the difference?
Yeah.
But strikingly, the judges allowed them to continue to do that, to keep the yoga in their school, which means now the parents are suing and appealing the case because they are, in essence, then declaring a state religion.
Exactly.
Because you can't do that. Public schools, they can teach about religion because of its historical and its cultural importance, but and students are free to exercise their personal religious beliefs, but the state itself cannot endorse or promote a religious practice.
And here's the irony of that. Those schools work so hard to take God out of schools. And they're so easily allow this spirits to come into the schools that they have no idea what they're allowing in.
Exactly. And yet they throw Christ out.
Yeah.
The only protection they have, they throw out of the school.
Exactly. Exactly.
And, you know, now these kids are practicing this stuff and everyone's saying, oh, no, it doesn't lead to Hinduism. Well, no, exactly the opposite is happening. These children have been spotted off campus, you know, posing themselves in the lotus position, mm-hmm. with their eyes closed in meditation. You know, many children have been led into Hindu practices. They're chanting Om, you know, in class and, you know.
And explain that, too, because that's not just a chant. That really means they're trying to become what? You're universal with one another?
Absolutely. The Om is supposedly the sound that was made at the beginning of the creation of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And that you are then uniting yourself with the creator of the universe every time you say the Om chant. So the Om chant is by no means a very innocent thing.
Exactly.
You are actually inviting the creator of the universe, which they don't believe is God, by the way. It's Brahman.
Of course.
And other members of the Hindu pantheon. You're inviting them into you. That's what you're doing when you say that.
Yes. Yeah. It's eerie when you talk about this, because without having that understanding, you never see the harm to it until you're starting to hear this. And that's why this is so important that we're having this conversation today. And this is Deacon Jim Thornhill. This is Holy Family Radio. You're listening to us at here in Holy Family Radio and 1140 AM Grand Rapids, 91.5 in Kalamazoo and 89.7 FM in Battle Creek. I'm here today with Susan Brinkman of Women in Grace, and we're talking about is it Christian or New Age? And Susan, we were just talking about that. You know, you brought up that one book, word of the Brahman. It says that is the name of the first of the three Hindu deities who is considered to be the source of all being from which every other object gets its being. And so that you're talking about is really the, honoring him, correct?
Exactly. Exactly. It's not, a lot of people will say, well, you know, why don't you just substitute our God in there? Because that's not what God they're talking about. That's why.
Yeah.
You can't just put a Band-Aid over it. It's like saying, well, I'm going to call this dog a cat, and therefore it's a cat now, because that's what I'm calling it.
Yeah.
You can't change the nature of something just by changing the name or the label that you put over it, plus the fact that you cannot Christianize a Hindu practice. That's syncretism.
Well, of course it is. And to even try and even attempt to do it is ludicrous.
Of course it is. And for people who have never don't know what syncretism is, that's the when you attempt to merge two opposing philosophies.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Now, I recall reading in one of your books here, and I have seven of them in front of me right now here. In one of them, you talked about yoga and the position. Every position in yoga is in the position of the serpent or the snake?
No. There's certain of them. There's a belief in Kundalini yoga, which is a particular style of yoga, where there is a coiled snake at the base of the spine, and the practice is to uncoil the snake and bring it up through the seven chakras. Which are energy centers, but we'll talk about that in a minute when we get into New Age energy. But the object of that is to bring the chakra up to the crown chakra, and that you will achieve then enlightenment. That's a certain kind of yoga. But there is positions of worship to the Kundalini snake. That's just one of them. That's just one of the many, many. There's hundreds of yoga positions here.
Okay.
And these, many, many different gods.
These are what they're calling exercise, right?
Exercises, yeah. That's what they're calling exercises.
Yeah. It's amazing.
These poses, they're known as asanas by the Hindus. And in fact, the Hindus launched something. The Hindu America Foundation, several years ago now, launched the Take Back Yoga campaign to try to stop this, stop this proliferation of yoga centers where they're saying, oh, it has nothing to do with Hinduism. It's impossible to separate the two.
Yeah, because it is their practice.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. And people just need to understand that. I know that that's not our religion, but you need to respect their beliefs the way we expect them to respect ours. That's how you get along in a pluralistic society. You don't adopt their practices, but you at least respect them enough that you don't do what we're doing to them and making them into these offensive caricatures of what they truly are.
Exactly. You know, as we move along here, I want to cover a few bases on this conversation. Let's talk a little bit about these enneagrams that that people get into, and some people use them as tools for personality traits and everything else. Talk a little bit about those.
Yeah, it's a typing system. It's a personality typing system, and the Ennea, it comes from the Greek word that means nine or gramma, which means line drawing. And what you do on there is you try to connect to it's like a nine-pointed star, and there's nine human personality types. They're symbolically represented on that star at equally distant points on the circumference of the circle.
Okay.
It's kind of complicated.
Yeah.
And then the numbers are then connected by arrows in these patterns, and that shows your integration or your disintegration.
Okay.
It gets into all kinds of stuff, and it's supposedly for character analysis, but the Enneagram is actually derived from the Sufi religion. That's where it came from. It derives from the occult, in other words.
Okay.
And it has absolutely no – it's junk science. It's totally junk science. It's has been subjected to little or no serious scientific scrutiny to help people deal with personality disorders. And it's just not something that really has any worth or value. It also has very Gnostic roots, and that's G-N-O-S-T-I-C, Gnostic roots, which is salvation through knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Those roots are all over the Enneagram. And Father Mitch Pacwa wrote a lot about it in his book, Catholics in the New Age. And he was actually at one point in time, he was introduced to this in the seminary and got very involved in it until he realized what was wrong with it.
He was involved in the Enneagrams?
On Enneagrams, yes.
Yeah.
He wrote extensively about the Enneagram and what the problems are for the Enneagram. And he says people don't go to doctors and psychologists unless that practitioner is tested and licensed. Well, people who do the Enneagram just appoint themselves. They have no background in this.
Exactly.
They're not tested. They're not licensed in any way. And here they are telling you what your personality type is like and making recommendations to you about what you should do.
Scary.
I mean, this is insane.
Yeah, that's scary stuff.
It's very, very scary.
So what made him finally see? Was he in seminary when he finally saw the errors of his ways?
Just information, and he finally began to read into it and find out more and more about it, and he began to realize, hey, this comes from the Sufis.
Yeah.
And a Chilean occultist, you know, Oscar Icaza was one of them, and then an Armenian occultist named George Gurdjieff was also involved in developing this thing. And, hey, if it's coming from occultists, it's not coming from a good tree.
I would imagine that's so true, yes.
So, you know, there's a problem with that. So the Enneagram, and as I said, he also learned that it was totally junk science.
Yes.
That there's no scientific backing to anything that it has to say. And I might say to you, the Enneagrams are different depending on where you're going. So if your parish is teaching the Enneagram, you can go down and you find something out on there that you don't like about yourself. Just go to another one, and you'll come up with a different one. Because
they're all different.
There's no uniformity to it.
Yeah.
They're all different. People just make up what they want, and they put this into Enneagram teachings, and this is, they go with it. And people really believe this.
Well, the more I read about it and the more you talk about it, the more I see the dangers of it. But the more I'm learning, too, is that I was relatively ignorant on a lot of this prior to this. I'm looking at another one of your books here, Susan, called Mind Control, and it's talked about the course that they have, this course creed, this course that they take. And I just see so many errors in what they talk about in these things.
That's the Course in Miracles.
Yeah.
That's very, very dangerous, the Course in Miracles. And
it sounds so innocuous.
It's also known as the New Age Bible.
Yeah.
That's what they call that. And it's just a series of different exercises that you go through, and it takes 365 days to do it. It's every day you have a different exercise, and you teach yourself how to see and think differently than the way you do. It tries to just totally, it's brainwashing is what it is. It brainwashes you, and it gets rid of all the Judeo-Christian beliefs that you have in your mind, and it just completely gets rid of all them. And you know that there's something wrong with it when the person who created it, Helen Schuchman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read about her.
Helen Schuchman. She claimed that she was channeling Jesus Christ and that he's the one who gave her this Course in Miracles. Now, you know, come on.
Yeah. And she says she was...
You're going to get what you pay for there.
Yeah, and she was channeling the Lord Jesus.
Right. That's what she claimed. She was saying that Jesus gave her this Course in Miracles.
My.
I know.
That's scary. You know, I'm going to go back again to the yoga again, because I think that's the one that's probably the most relevant right now to our times, because that's the one that people kind of gravitate to right now. You talked about a good yoga instructor can really bring people away from the Lord. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, they can introduce as much of the Hindu background to yoga as they want. I know classes that go on where the teachers will just have statues of the different Hindu gods in there. They will spend a lot more time on the meditation. And most Hindus will tell you there's no such thing as yoga without the meditation, and that it's, you're not even supposed to do yoga without the meditation. That should go with it. And a lot of people think, well, if I'm not doing the meditation, then there's nothing bad in it. But and I got this really from a former Tibetan nun. That's total hogwash, because the way that you pose your body and then having to hold your body in that position causes you to breathe in a certain way, right?
Of course.
And meditation, these meditation are, that is based on pranayama, which is breathing.
Okay.
So you can actually put yourself into that altered state, the same altered state that you would have if had you practiced meditation, just by doing the asanas.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens naturally. It happens spontaneously, whether you would intend it or not. Most people don't get that either. They don't understand that the body is going to, you know, react, and you're going to be breathing in a certain way, and these positions are designed for that.
Okay.
So you got to be careful about that too, and don't think, well, I'm not doing the meditation, so I must be okay. That's not true. And a teacher can get in there and be telling you all kinds of stuff and introducing you to all kinds of different Hindu beliefs, even just from the pictures that are on the wall.
Exactly.
And the statues that she has around there. And it begins to desensitize you to it. And you begin to think, oh, you know, Hindu stuff is kind of nice. And da-da-da. And before you know it, you're looking into Hinduism. You're starting to practice a little bit of Hinduism. And there you go.
And it's all so subtle.
Very subtle.
It's
good
also,
word.
It's also,
very subtle.
It's just a mat in your yoga outfit, and you think this is just a little bit of exercise, and you're going in there with all the best intentions, not realizing what you're opening yourself up to.
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh. That is scary. You know, Susan, this is going to be a great conference when you come in here. There's so much in these books to read that, you know, but there was, I'm trying to recall on all my readings here because I read these very thoroughly and did a lot of highlighting. You were talking about actually some physical ailments that people would get or some physical symptoms they would have.
Oh, there's a lot of physical problems associated with yoga. There's a lot. In fact, there's a book out called The Science of Yoga by William Broad.
Mm-hmm.
I got the book. It's very good. He has in many places in there, he's very pro-yoga, but he's one of the people who was hurt by yoga. And apparently, yoga-related injuries are quite prevalent. And it's known by doctors and hospitals, and some of them are very, very serious. Mostly having to do with overextensions of the neck.
Okay.
That's where a lot of injuries come from, and there's a lot of positions and poses in yoga that do require that, a hyperextension. But there's other things, too. People and even instructors getting seriously injured.
Okay.
To a point where now, Mr. Broad interviewed a lot of these instructors, and some of them are pretty big names in the yoga field. That have come out and said that, you know, Americans, for one, shouldn't do yoga at all because they're just not familiar. They're not accustomed to the different postures, and it's very difficult for them, and a lot of them get hurt in the classes. And, you know, they'll go there because they have a bad back, and they end up – this is what happened to William Broad because he had a back injury, and it ended up making it worse because of – you know, if you don't get the position just right, you can get hurt. And that happens really in any exercise. I used to many, many years ago. I was an aerobic instructor.
You were,
and
personally?
I was. So a lot of this stuff, I don't really fall for it when I read it. I think, no, that's not that's not isometric. I know what an isometric is, and that's not isometric. That's yoga.
Yeah.
And you can be hurt by not standing, you know, properly on your foot and having your weight evenly situated in your stance. I mean, there's a lot of different things that you can be hurt in, and yoga is especially prone to that because of the unfamiliarity of these poses, the way the body is being posed, especially, like I said, with that hyperextension. There's a lot of problems. That's a very interesting book. Very interesting book. I highly recommend it.
Give us the name of that book again.
A lot of injuries associated with yoga.
What's the name of that book again?
The Science of Yoga.
The Science of Yoga. Now, there's another part, and again, I know I'm jumping around a little bit, but I want to cover as much as we can. There was a part in your book where one Catholic priest was talking to a young woman who was having problems, and he asked her a question if she was either was involved in some channeling or something going on in her life, because something tragic had happened to her. Do you recall that in the book?
Not off the top of my head, but what else about it?
Well, I was just, you know, it was interesting that priest brought that up because he saw something in her where she was being, I think, almost a possession.
Okay. Now I remember what you said. Yes. See, and when you do this kind of work and you're out there talking and speaking with people at that, a lot of times they'll talk to you about different manifestations or stuff that's happening to them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always a reason why it started. So you ask the person, okay, what were you involved in your life? And many times they'll say, nothing, because they don't realize that some of this stuff was bad.
Exactly.
They don't get that. And you explain to them, well, no, you know, you're not supposed to be going to psychics, or you're not supposed to be going, you know, to mediums. You shouldn't be calling to that. You shouldn't be playing with Ouija boards. You shouldn't be getting your tarot cards read. You shouldn't be doing this stuff.
And that's exactly what she did.
And you opened the door, and now it came in, and now you've got other problems. This is the same thing that's going on right now. A big thing right now is Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a form of New Age energy medicine, which is very misunderstood by people. They don't understand what this Qi, Prana, what this energy is that they're supposedly manipulating, that this energy has no basis in science. We know of two kinds of energy. There's veritable energy, and that's what we know about. That's, you know, visible light. That's, you know, monochromatic radiation. We know about that. But then there's this other kind called putative.
Okay.
And that's where these alleged energy fields, you know, that human beings are supposedly infused with.
Right.
These are the yoga chakras. These are the energy centers that they're talking about with those chakras. That's what they're talking about in Reiki and in therapeutic touch and in yoga. They're talking about manipulating this alleged energy field, which has never been found to exist in science. There's no evidence that it exists.
It's amazing.
So the key in Reiki is this universal life force energy. But the problem with Reiki is that you have to be attuned through a series of attunements. It's three of them to become a master in this. And you are then attuned to the Reiki source. And they never, of course, tell you who the source is.
Yeah.
And during the course of this attunement, you're assigned a spirit guide.
Hmm.
And the spirit guide uses you as a channel, or you channel this spirit guide. And that spirit guide directs how you're manipulating this fictitious energy in the person.
My goodness.
So Reiki is totally built on hogwash. Number one, but very dangerous hogwash, because you are connected to a spirit guide.
Yeah.
These people are connected to a spirit guide. And there have been exorcists who have spoken about having to exorcise people or deliver people who are involved in Reiki, and the names of their spirit guides, the priest knew it without even being told it, and said, you know, such and such of a spirit, and had to be cast out.
Yes.
And it was the name of the spirit guide.
Is this becoming more popular?
Oh, it's everywhere.
It is.
It's absolutely everywhere. It's in hospitals. You go to parish health fairs, and they have Reiki masters there. As a matter of fact, it got so bad that several years ago, the U.S. bishops actually condemned it. They issued a statement in April 2009 condemning Reiki and the practice of Reiki as inappropriate for Catholic institutions. And that's because, of course, it's not based in science. It's really nothing more than superstition, because there's no foundation for it. And then you have this occult aspect to it, where you're being attuned to a spirit guide.
Yeah.
And to a Reiki source, which is a spiritual entity. And it's extremely dangerous. And you have people running around out there doing it, and they're doing it in Catholic hospitals. They're doing it. And I tell people when they write to me, they say, oh, please, you know, help. They're doing it over at my Catholic hospital. I say, hey, write to your bishop.
Yeah. Well, and you make it very clear in your book on Learn to Discern and Reiki, and on page 52, it says here, the catechism is quite clear about the use of divination even for healing purposes. All practices of magic or sorcery by which one attempts to tame occult powers so as to place them at one service and have supernatural powers over others, even if this were for the sake of restoring their health, are gravely contrary to the virtue of religion.
Absolutely.
And the Catholic Conference of Bishops, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops saw it as an insoluble problem with this Reiki.
Absolutely they did. You know, the end never justifies the means.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's another thing from the Catechism. The end never justifies the means. So just because you want to try to heal somebody, that's no excuse for resorting to occult powers in order to do it. But a lot of people say, but I didn't know. Well, they have a responsibility, you know, don't they, Deacon Jim? I mean, you can't just run around and say, I don't know my faith.
No.
We all have a catechism. We all have a Bible. We're expected to use them. And you can discern all of this stuff by looking at the catechism and the Bible.
And I think there's another saying in law, ignorance is not an excuse of the law. You know, we have a responsibility as mature Catholics to understand what we are entering into and what we're about to delve into, and to have a clear understanding, is it proper for us to be involved in this? That's why this is so important, because obviously I hope we're going to stimulate people to kind of prick their conscience a little bit to say, I need to learn more about this. I've got my children involved in this. I've got my grandchildren, and I'm making no overtures to stop this.
Exactly. There is nobody who enters a yoga class who can honestly say they don't know that that's Hindu.
Yeah.
You can't tell me they don't know yoga is Hindu. I mean, come on.
Well, yeah, just
that's Hindu. Of course, everybody knows that, or they should know that. And once you know that, that's your biggest red flag. Gee, what am I doing here?
Yeah, Exactly. You know, Susan, we've got a few minutes left. I guess the big question is how do we approach this in this culture? How do we start to tame this down? How do we start to bring people into a realization? I know it's going to take a lot of education, but what can we do as people to really help people to discern this?
Go back to preaching Christ.
Yeah.
That's what I say. You know, all of these different retreat centers, so many of them, at least here in the Philadelphia area, I mean, you don't even see the name Jesus Christ anywhere.
Yeah.
In their offerings.
Yeah. You and
everything
I share.
Is Tai Chi, yoga, centering prayer. It's all this New Age stuff. And you know, when you ask them about it, they'll say the same thing. Well, you know, that's what's popular and that's what's attracting people. You know what? Jesus Christ, there's power in the Word of God. And if you really preach Christ, He is very popular.
And
he
guess
is very
what?
Popular. And I say the people that are at these retreat centers that are offering this stuff, they're the ones who aren't attracted to Christ anymore, and they don't know how to speak about Him with passion and with, you know, really wanting to convert people. They're tired of Him, and so they're looking for other things, and they're just assuming that everybody else just wants these other things. But if you present church teaching in all of its glory, people are attracted to it. Why go to centering prayer? Why blank your mind for 20 minutes twice a day when you could be growing through the four stages of prayer that are taught by St. Teresa of Avila?
You know, I have to laugh when you said that because I take the movie Star Wars, and I remember when the one master said to Luke, clear your mind. In other words, Luke, be stupid.
All this mind blanking.
Yeah,
and
just blank your mind out.
And they think it's so great.
Yeah.
And they think it's contemplation. And they have no idea. And I'm a Carmelite, so of course I would really, this is a real bone of a contention for me. But it really is very important that people understand that, hey, that's kindergarten compared to the authentic Catholic contemplative tradition.
Yeah.
I mean, where you can go in prayer is phenomenal, way beyond vocal prayer.
Yeah. You know, Susan, you hit the nail on the head, too. If people would have a deep and profound relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ, they would not have that hole in their soul and trying to find something else to replace it, because that relationship would be so strong and so powerful that nothing would overtake that, because they would know the truth then. But you know, we're tepid yet in our teaching and in our church, and we've got to really present this understanding that Christ is there for this personal relationship with us, and to keep us and keep us on solid footing with Him.
Oh, amen, amen to that, Jim. I really think this is the answer.
Yeah.
Is to really preach Christ. Get out there and preach Him. He's beautiful, wonderful. Our God is to be praised to the hilt.
Exactly.
And there's so much that He wants to do for us. He's the answer to everything. He's the answer to everything. You don't need yoga. You don't need Reiki. You don't need to blank your mind.
No.
You need Him.
Yep. You need that profound relationship with Him. He will fill all those voids, and then you will no longer have to try and discern if you're not being fed. We are fed as Catholics by the body and blood of Christ, and we are fed every day by this relationship with the Lord. And Susan, I just want to thank you so much for this time here. It goes so fast. I had a million other questions to ask you, but as radio is, you only get so much time. But I'm going to encourage people to come to this conference, women, men. It's going to be called Learn to Discern. It's on Saturday, March 2nd, 2015. May 2nd, 2015. We're going to be able to, it's going to be at St. Anne's Home in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and we're going to be sending out something here. You're going to go, you can, to register, we've got a number here you can call. It's 616-735-1531 to get information. Again, that's 616-735-1531, and we will put more information out about that, Susan, also. But I want to thank you for being here.
Oh, I can't wait to come out to Grand Rapids and meet you in person, and I think it's going to be a great day, and there'll be plenty of time for Q&A. So if people have questions, I'll be there.
Wonderful. Thank you so much again, and we're going to continue to ask God's blessing for you, Susan.
Thank you so much. Same to you.
Okay, God bless.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Been listening to Living the Catholic Life with your host Deacon Jim Thorndale on Holy Family Radio. If you'd like to listen to this program again or share it with a friend, audio copies are available online at holyfamilyradio.net. Thank you for listening.